Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's see if my streak continues. Let's go to the secret door. Hello there.
Howdy, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm supposed to give you a clue, and is that I know a lot about skulls and bones, but I've never been to Yale.
Well, this is not Alexandria Robbins. It's Lloyd Pye.
Right, exactly.
How are you, Lloyd?
I'm doing good. That's I'm cold, but I'm doing good.
Where are you right now?
I'm in London.
London? What are you doing there?
I was over here giving a lecture at Edinburgh, Scotland, which is even colder, by the way.
On the Star Child?
Yeah, so I was giving a lecture there.
What kind of reception did you have?
It was really a good reception. There were close to 200 people there, but it was one of the most difficult venues I've ever seen because it was in a gymnasium, an unheated gymnasium, so it was cold and everybody had to sit on bleachers with no backrest for 10 hours. And they did it. They did it. The Scots are tough, man. The Scots are tough. That's what everybody said. So I was flabbergasted, but they sucked it up.
You know, now that I've got you here, now that you've come through the secret door, why don't you give us some updates on what you've been working on?
Well, I've been working on the Star Child. Obviously, we've got many good things happening there. The geneticist that's been working with us for this year has stopped with the shotgunning technique because it's so slow and laborious. He got about 30,000 base pairs using that technique, enough to give us a very good indication of what the final result will be like, but it's certainly not definitive. So he's now using another technique which requires a machine that will recover anywhere from hundreds of thousands to maybe a few million base pairs. So this is going to be a huge boost for our credibility against critics and skeptics who rightly say 30,000 is a very small sample relative to a 3 billion genome. So we're going to up our credibility quite a bit with the result and give skeptics something to think about if they start, if they say, oh, it's silly and ridiculous after that much, and if we still get the indications of a big part of it being not human, they're going to have to think twice. So that's really exciting news. We think we'll have a result by perhaps Christmas or the end of the year, but whenever we get it, it's going to be really, really big news, and it's underway as we speak, so I'm very excited about that. The other big news relative to the Star Child is that in Edinburgh, I was able to connect with Jim Corr of the singing group, the famous Irish singing group, the Corrs. And Jim is very active in the New World Order, 9/11 movement, and he would probably make a very good guest for you. Very articulate guy.
Okay, sure.
But he also was very interested in the Star Child, and he said, "Listen, I'd like to try to help you with this." So he's going to do what he can. Now he's wrapped up right now in a very, very contentious situation in Ireland, in his home country, where they're trying to sell the debt basically to the International Monetary Fund. Ireland is deeply in debt, and there's a lot of financial finagling going on there, and Jim's in the middle of that. They're having a big protest this weekend, Saturday, to try to get the government to back down on what they're trying to do. I don't know how successful they'll be, but they're going to give it, their best effort. So those two things on the Star Child front are very, very exciting, and I think Jim Corr is extremely well connected and in good position to really lend a hand, and I'm very excited about his involvement in the Star Child.
Well, that's good. A quick update to tell folks, new listeners, what is the Star Child project?
The Star Child skull, for those new listeners, is a real true bone skull. No question about that. Found in Mexico in about 1930 and not really brought to light till 1999. And I've been dealing with it. In February, George, it's going to be 12 years, if you can believe that. We have been talking about this for 12 years. I know it's incredible. But nonetheless, all the tests that we've done over those years, scientific tests that we've done, none of them have blown it out of the water as just some kind of human deformity. Everything we do indicates it's not entirely human. But, of course, the thing that really really tells the tale is DNA, and we've been working on that all along, but the technology didn't catch up to what we needed until 2006, but we didn't have the money to pay for that kind of technology. It was millions of dollars at that point. Now it's within our financial reach, and we have a geneticist that's willing to work with us, and so we're making finally in 2010, we've made very good headway, more than we've ever made before, and we anticipate making much, much more in 2011. So we're very excited about our situation. There's no doubt that the skull is legitimate and real. All you have to do is go to starchildproject.com and educate yourself, and you'll know all about it.
Lloyd, what's your take on the origins of human life? You know, we've talked a lot about the Star Child Project. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about your views on that.
Well, I believe that humans, I go along with the Sitchin argument that we were genetically engineered. I think it's obvious, very clear in our genome itself that we're genetically engineered. The second and third primate chromosome in us, in the human genome, all higher primates have 48 chromosomes. We have 46, but we have the same amount of DNA. So how'd that happen? The second and third primate chromosomes in humans have had their ends nipped off very carefully so that they could then be fused back together such that they would still continue to function. Now, science, of course, claims, well, nature can do that because nature can do anything. That's garbage. Nature can't do things like that. And also, too, beyond that, nine of our other chromosomes have segments that are called inversions, in which they were nipped out at some length, removed from the chromosome, flipped over and put back in and fused back in the proper place such that they still function. Nature for sure doesn't do that. So these are things that science just ignores and doesn't talk about and doesn't want to talk about, because it's obvious that we are the product of genetic engineering at around 200,000 years ago, exactly what Zechariah Sitchin said in his writings that the Sumerians wrote in their tablets. So that's pretty much my belief. I think we're genetically engineered around 200,000 years ago.
And, you know, we lost Zechariah in October. What a loss that is, huh, Lloyd?
George, it was really a loss to all of us, but he left such an incredible body of work. But he had a dying wish, which was to find out in his last book, for those of you who don't know, in his last book, he put out a call for the Natural History Museum here in London to do DNA research on the skeleton that they have of what he felt was an Anunnaki goddess. Her name is Pu'avi. She was originally called Queen Shubad, but now she's come to be known as Pu'avi, Lady Pu'avi. And she was found in a grave with like 30-some-odd retainers that died with her. She was a very important person. And Zechariah believed that she was an actual, true Anunnaki goddess with an Anunnaki mother. Now, what this means is that her mitochondrial DNA, which, for those who don't know, flows down through the female line because the mitochondria float outside the nucleus. So when you have sexual reproduction, the egg carries the mitochondrial DNA and the sperm only carries the chromosomes from a male with a tail stuck on it. So she would have mitochondrial DNA of the Anunnaki. Very, very exciting to recover her mitochondrial DNA, which is fairly easy to recover, much, much easier than the nuclear DNA that has to be recovered from the Star Child. So Zechariah wanted the Museum of Natural History to sequence it. The problem, as I found out, I was contacted by a representative of the Sitchin family named John Cogswell, one of Zechariah's very, very good friends, a man who went on every trip that Zechariah ever took, And I went on the first three trips. So John was my roommate on the third trip. So John contacted me and asked if I, you know, since I was coming to London, maybe I could check in and see what is required. And so I did that. I went to the museum. I talked to the woman that Zechariah mentioned in his book, Dr. Margaret Clegg. And it turns out that she's being bombarded by emails from people, from Zechariah fans, who are wanting, you know, to know why the museum won't make this information available. Well, the truth of it is, I was there. They have a huge, huge genetics lab, but it's not equipped to do ancient DNA. And that's one of the things she asked me to do, was let people know that it isn't that she's recalcitrant to do it, but that the Natural History Museum does not have the physical capacity to do it, that it's going to have to be done by an outside lab that specializes in the recovery of ancient DNA. But more importantly than that, it has to be done under the auspices of just absolutely top-flight people, or they will not allow an invasive, destructive test to the bone. So she's given me a list of all the requirements that they have, and I've passed that list on to John, and the Sitchin family has to decide what they want to do. But this is not an easy thing. This is a very complex, complicated, expensive process, and they have to make some decisions about what they want to do. Just the same way that I have to make decisions with the Star Child, they have to make decisions with that. And, of course, I'm here to help them to whatever extent I can. I know that John is trying to help them every way he can. But these are their decisions, and we certainly leave it up to them. But I want people to know, and I'm going to announce it on my mailing list and hopefully through the Sitchin website, to Zechariah's fans, that it isn't that the museum is unwilling to help, unwilling to carry through on this, but there are protocols that we have to follow, and that, and it's complex and it's long, but if everything were to go right, maybe in about a year we'd have this answer, and it would be very exciting, very historic.
Sure will. Now, the belief in mankind being genetically altered does not negate the possibility of divine intelligence or God, does it?
No, not at a higher level. When there are two things you have to consider. There's the practical realities of what we are and how we got here, and then there is the more complex thing that's called, in my understanding of it, is called first cause. Because if we're created by the Anunnaki, who created them? And who created those that created the Anunnaki and back, that's first cause. And that could easily be God or a God-like concept. So it certainly can't be ruled out. But what we have to look at, in my opinion, the thing we have to focus on is our immediate real and true history, because we getting to first cause, I don't think we're going to be able to do that unless someone gives us that information, the first cause themselves. And you can certainly argue about it, but I don't think we can get to that level of knowledge in our lifetime. So we just have to focus on what we can get to, and I think what we can get to is where we're actually really from and how we came to be here, and maybe start moving toward taking a place at the Galactic Roundtable for human beings or whatever's out there, where other alien beings coordinate themselves. Maybe we can have a seat at that table someday if we get to the point where we can acknowledge their existence.
What drives you, Lloyd? You don't give up.
I must be, we talk about this a lot. I must be crazy in some way, George. I don't really know what it is, but only a crazy person would do what I do. So I have to acknowledge that I must have some kind of mental aberration, because I just get, I get a bone in my teeth and I just can't let it go. I don't know what psychological trait that is, but it's certainly not normal.
It's cost you time, money, but you just keep pushing and pushing.
Something about the truth just makes me nuts. I want the truth. I want to know. I really want to know as much as I can what the truth of things is, and I just get infuriated when I find out that we're being misled deliberately or just from cowardice or from whatever reason causes it to be done, I just get really annoyed. So I don't know.
Lloyd, one of your classic books, Everything You Know Is Wrong. Tell me the premise of that one. That's
one of the well, Everything You Know Is Wrong is just the idea that all of life on Earth, really all of life, not just human life, is brought here or manipulated here. It's called the intervention theory. Basically, it supports the intervention theory that all of life, from the very beginning, from the very first life form, was put here, that Earth is a terraformed planet, that it's been designed and manipulated all along. Now, you can argue, well, why did they go with dinosaurs? Why did they go with, you know, with what? Why the cycles? I don't really understand that. But all I can tell you is that in looking at the series of life that we've had on the planet over the past 4.5 billion years, it shows that every single time you look at it, things were brought here. The very first life forms, the two kinds of prokaryotic bacteria, they just suddenly appear in the fossil record, just boom, when the planet is still a seething mass. And it just so happens that these prokaryotic bacteria are able to live in any conceivable environment you can name. They are able to thrive, and they do, and they're still here. Then after 2 billion years of that, when the Earth had calmed down, hardened up a little bit, and had a little bit of oxygen, in came the eukaryotes, producing a much more sophisticated single-celled organism, producing much more oxygen, right on. And then they do it for 1.5 million, and then you have, a 1.5 billion, and then you have the Cambrian explosion. Boom, overnight, like 5 million years. You have every imaginable kind of sea creature, 20-25 phyla, I think, just amazing. Everyone agrees that the Cambrian explosion just can't be explained in Darwinian terms. Even Darwin knew that. So, and it goes from there. Every time you have a catastrophe, we've had 5 major catastrophic events and some minor ones wiping out huge amounts of life. Shortly thereafter, you've got new things. The dinosaurs get wiped out. Within a relatively few million years, you have the very large mammals that then came to dominate the land. On and on. Things seem to be brought here. I think we're a terraformed planet.
Well, we may be, and there may be many like this planet all over the place. What's your take on Bigfoot, Sasquatch?
I absolutely am convinced that Bigfoot, Sasquatch is the giant kind of 4 types of creatures like this that live all over the world. In my book, Everything You Know Is Wrong, that you just mentioned, I have a whole section there with, I think, some of the best at that time evidence for their reality, and in it I show that the Earth, we think we humans live everywhere and that they couldn't possibly be out there without us knowing it, but in fact that's not true. We live primarily on about 50% of the arable land on the Earth. If you take away the deserts, if you take away the ice caps, just the arable land, we live in about half of it. The rest of it is covered over by thick montane forests and jungles, and those are the habitats of the hominoids.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back with more with Lloyd Pye. Questions on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Lloyd, we continue to get reports of alien grays, primarily, more than any other ET-type race. Why do you think that is?
Well, they're probably the dominant group in our area. We also categorize them in 2 types, the tall grays and the short grays. So within that group of grays, you have at least 2 distinct types, and possibly then there's gray-human hybrids, and gray, I've even heard of gray-reptilian hybrids. So there's a lot of mixing and matching. Once you get to the point of where you can manipulate DNA, George, you can produce almost anything you want or you need for a specific environment. And I think a lot of what goes on out there is those who are in charge, those who are doing the manipulating of the environments, of the planets, they look at the environment, which is maybe something that's hard to manipulate, and something that would be easier to manipulate is the genes of the creatures that live there. And they say, what's the environment of this planet? What can live here comfortably? Let's make one, or let's bring some from this planet and some from that planet and maybe some from that planet, and we'll make something that'll fit here perfectly. And I think that's what they do.
Absolutely. And we're going to take calls this half hour with Lloyd Pye right here on Coast to Coast AM with regards to the Star Child Skull Project or any other thing that he has been working on all these years. What has fascinated you with everything you've done?
Well, just the incredible range of expertise that I've seen over the years in conferences within the whole field of alternative knowledge. There's just, it's like a whole subset of science going on out here. And you know, most of the world is just completely unaware of it. You, more than anyone, probably because of the show, know what I'm talking about. There is this incredible range of knowledge, of information, of research going on, and it's good stuff. It's not just off-the-wall lunatic, you know, fringe material. It's really good quality science going on by people who are like the real scientists of today. Everyone forgets that there was a time when religion completely dominated human thought, and there were men and women known as scientists who were challenging their authority and challenging their view of reality. And in the end, the challengers won. Well, now they are mainstream science. Mainstream science has taken over the controlling the catbird seat of what religion had. And so mainstream science dictates what we can and cannot think, what we can and cannot know, just the way religion used to. And now there are these people that are, and I'm one of them, who are the actual real scientists who are not just taking things at face value, who are looking underneath the covers, underneath the areas that we're not supposed to look into, and finding or trying at least to find and reach and achieve the truth in the same way the original scientists used to work. And I, you know, that's what impresses me the most, how many people are out there with real, sincere, deep, and profound dedication to what they're doing, and they're producing great information.
Joel from Kansas City sends us a fast blast, Lloyd, and he wants to know the mother or the other, you know, body that found next to the Star Child. What do you really think that person might have been?
Well, it certainly wasn't a mother. We know that for a fact because in 2003 we had a genetic test run that showed that her mitochondrial DNA and the mitochondrial DNA of the Star Child's mother were different, human but different. So she wasn't its mother. Whether she was a lover, a partner, an overseer, whatever, a friend, there was a deep emotional bond there because when she buried the Star Child after it died, she left its hand out of the grave that she made for it, and then she laid down beside it, wrapped its hand around her arm, and killed herself. So for a long time, we believed that had to be a mother-child kind of sacrifice, you know, situation, but in reality, it isn't. So we have to look elsewhere, and I'm not sure, but whatever her relationship to it was, it seems to have been profoundly emotional and connected.
I do know that the mind is an incredible thing and that the human consciousness can do all kinds of things. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Have you ever dabbled in that?
You know, the science has proven the placebo effect time and time and time again, and that has kind of a negative connotation, but what it means is that the mind can heal the body, and it's been shown time and time again. And in fact, I just had a dentist the other day tell me that if you have had a history of bad teeth, you know, where you get infected teeth, he said if you just give them pills to carry around with them so that, okay, you've got your tablets. If you're ever anywhere and you have problems, here they are. He said, generally, that goes away. I said, well, really, that's impressive. Just knowing that they're there mentally helps the people not have so many infections. So, yeah, totally agree. Mind-body, there's absolutely a lot of connections, and a lot more research needs to be done on that. Mainstream science poo-poos it, but I think they're totally wrong to do that.
All right, Kevin is in Connecticut. You're up with Lloyd Pye. Go ahead, Kevin.
Thank you, George. I certainly want to go along with the idea that Coast to Coast AM folks are divine. I hope you're going to lift that out and make a promo out of it. That was good. I got to tell you. Mr. Pye, good evening. And To the extent that you're comfortable commenting, I guess I've always wondered about this. Would it be a fair assumption to state that there is experimentation going on, and I'm going to say specifically on the part of governments, perhaps military organizations, with respect with using DNA and genetics and so forth to create, breed, whatever word you want to use, superhumans, specifically giants, specifically extremely tall, extremely incredibly huge human beings? I've just always had a feeling about it, and I never had the chance to ask an expert. So,
well, I wouldn't be necessarily an expert in that because I'm not in the government or military deep enough to know those kinds of things. I am not aware of it. Let me put it that way. I think that once we began to understand how incredibly complex the genetic system was, I think that went away. Now, back in World War II, it's well known that the Germans worked extremely hard. They had a program going to try to create a human chimp or a human gorilla hybrid, and they worked at it and they worked at it, but they didn't understand genetics enough to know why it kept failing. But they wanted very much to create a super soldier, because everyone, I think, is aware of the fact that primates have 5 to 10 times, pound for pound, the strength that we have. They're much, much stronger than we are, all of them, down to monkeys. So the German program failed because they didn't understand it, and then there came a point where we understood how complex it was, and I don't think you could sell that really to the government, because it is incredibly difficult to the point of impossibility right now. That's not to say that it will be in the future, because we're learning so much so fast, but I still don't think we're to the point of interspecies breeding like that, where you have 48 chromosomes and 46 chromosomes and the differences are so wide. I don't think we're there yet, but I don't rule it out in the future.
We're going to Miami Beach now with Mike. Good morning, Mike. Ted.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
I always enjoy listening to your show, as well as Lloyd Pye especially. I have a question. This goes back to a few years ago when you had Lloyd on. He was talking about the Star Child skull, and how the skull itself, the circumference, was bigger, which would house a larger brain, larger capacity. And you, George, raised the issue about the autistic savants who maybe don't pay attention to that 5 or 10% threshold, which Lloyd raised about, you know, that human beings only have about 5% or 10% of brain power usage.
Right.
And so I was always curious since then. I wanted to ask that question. Basically, I guess maybe a philosophical question at this point, but do you think the fact that the people that we call geniuses in our society, maybe, I'm sure Lloyd's there, and the way you navigate these guests of yours, I think you're probably there as well, or, you know, people at the Harvard and those schools, are they that way because God was on their side and they made a better stuff than the rest, or are they just simply better at navigating the use of that other 90% of the brain power potential, or is it the same thing?
You're talking about savants?
Well, I'm just saying, you said that that's autistic savants, those rare people, like the Rain Man types,
right,
don't pay attention to that 5 or 10% threshold.
No. I'm very clear on that in my writings and in my lectures. What I believe is that when the Anunnaki were creating us, and I believe that they created us genetically,
right. Yeah.
They wanted us to be, and it says very clearly, in their own image after their own likeness. They needed slaves, they needed servants, but they also
right.
needed women. Most of the ones here were men. So they wanted something that they could live with, play with, you know, et cetera. So in doing that, they wanted it to be their slave and their servant, to be like themselves, but not themselves. They didn't want us to be as nearly as smart and as functional as they were intellectually, but they had to give us their brains if they were going to give us their bodies, which they
right.
did. So what they did was they put, I believe, some kind of partition in our brains so that we got very little usage of their brain, relatively speaking. So you and I and all of us who are normal, we think we're brilliant, we think we're very smart and all that, but really we're just like pond scum compared to them. But when a savant comes along, in the damage to the functional part of their brain that they should be using, in the
right.
damage to that, because none of them are normal people, they get like what I envision as a tear in the partition, a little
right.
small tear in the partition into the forbidden area, which allows them, each savant, a single beam of light into that forbidden zone. And so we have over 100 savants now that we've studied, and they have this incredibly wide range of skills over art, over music, over math, over memory. So those brains, those are the Anunnaki brains, and they're in our heads, because if there were one or two savants, you could just write it off as accident. But there are over 100. So with human beings, we all carry those phenomenal abilities that the savants have, and instead of just a beam of light in, the whole area is there for our use if we knew how to drop that partition, which I think we will discover in the next, say, 50 to 100 years. At the rate we're going with genetic discovery, I think within 50 or 100 years, we can drop that partition and gain full access to the Anunnaki brain. And when we do that, then we're going to be able to really move ourselves up into the league of everyone else at the Galactic Roundtable, and we'll be able to take a seat if we don't kill ourselves or destroy the planet first in the process.
That's a big if, too, Lloyd, isn't it?
It's a big if, George. No one kids that we're fully capable of pooping in the nest, which we're doing, you know, dramatically as we speak. But nonetheless, we have to hope. We have to assume the best, and you know, let's on this holiday, let's think the best.
Let's go to Lynn in Utah, final caller. Go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, George. My friend and I were talking about that skull, and we were both wondering if they figured out what those fibers, those interwoven fibers, were.
The fibers are, a lot of people question whether they might be Morgellons fibers, and I always make a point of saying no, in all likelihood not, because they're so very microscopic, number one, and you can see Morgellons fibers. You know, they're there. You can see them. So they're much, much, much larger. And they tend to be, Morgellons tends to be an affliction of the skin and organs, whereas the Starchild fibers are woven through the matrix of the bone like rebar in concrete, and they make it very much harder. And I would add that for recently, George, within the last 4 weeks, I actually cut the bones of both the Starchild and the human for the first time myself. I've watched it cut on several occasions, but I had never done it before myself. And speaking of those fibers, I don't know what it is, but something is, it's what everybody says. That bone was so hard, so thin, so incredibly thin compared to the human bone, and yet so much harder to cut. I had a little handsaw, cut, cut, cut. I must have did 200 to 300 strokes to cut 1 inch of that bone with that saw blade. And with the human, I was through an inch and a quarter in about 50 strokes. Unbelievable difference. Those fibers are very, very durable. They help make it strong. And someday we'll find out what they are. But as of this point, we've never had the money to develop the protocols and to go through the testing procedures to try to find out what they are.
Quick opportunity here, Lloyd, for you to just wish everyone a happy holiday, and we'll sign off. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Wonderful holiday. Appreciate you listening, and look forward to being on again sometime.
Always. Lloyd Pye. His website, of course, LloydPye.com, and Lex makes it very easy for you. Already linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Well, that wraps up our Thanksgiving night program. Hope you enjoyed our secret door. 4 for 4, I win my bet with Tom Danheiser. For Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.